Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And this evening, I'm going to be reading to you some notes that I've taken from the Talmud of Emmanuel, which is a four-hour movie that is out on YouTube right now. I recommend it. Pleios was the Ishwish, the king of wisdom that was in charge of earth during the time of Emmanuel. Emmanuel was born in a stable in Bethlehem during the time of Herod Antipas. Emmanuel was the son of the guardian messenger Gabriel. And wise men came to learn where the newborn king of wisdom was born. These wise men knew that Emmanuel would have the knowledge of Pleios, and he would learn to use the power of his spirit. Herod Antipas told the wise men to search diligently for the boy. The light with a long tail had hovered directly over the stable where the boy was found. Herod feared the boy because he realized that this young boy would one day have a great power. Eventually, Herod had a change of heart and no longer desired to harm the boy. The light with the long tail also made a singing sound. The celestial sons Gabriel's spaceship was the light with the long tail that made the singing sound. The boy Emmanuel was taken to Egypt for safety. Mary and Joseph followed the spaceship that made the singing sound and had the long tail of light. They followed the light all the way to Egypt. Pleios and his people had come from the depths of space and escaped from a place where his people were held in bondage. Pleios explained that terrible things would happen if the people of the earth do not follow the laws of creation. The knowledge of consciousness itself, the universal consciousness, is greater than Pleios. Eventually, Emmanuel and his parents left Egypt and moved to Nazareth because Herod Antipas had a change of heart. Now, near Nazareth, John the Baptist was teaching, and John talked about creation, the universal consciousness. He called the universal consciousness the consciousness of the universe as a whole. And John taught the laws of creation. He ate locusts and wild honey for food, and he called the teachings of the Pharisees illogical. And he talked about the great knowledge of Pleios, the king of wisdom. John taught that in 2,000 years, the people of the earth would start to comprehend the teachings of creation. In the future, John said that the people of the earth would build spacecraft that would also make the singing sounds, and these spacecraft would allow them to travel to other worlds. Emmanuel eventually came to John the Baptist and was baptized by him. Suddenly, a metallic spacecraft appeared, and there was a large voice from the craft that said, "This is my son, in whom I am well pleased." All of the people that were there fell on their faces in fear. Emmanuel got on the spacecraft and was gone for 40 days and 40 nights. For 40 days and nights, Emmanuel no longer lived among the daughters and the sons of the people of the earth. Emmanuel was said to have stayed between the winds of the north and the west. He received a great deal of knowledge while he was there. During the instruction period, he stayed with the wise guardian messengers of Pleios. They taught him much wisdom and knowledge. They explained to Emmanuel the great power of creation, which is the consciousness of the universe itself. They taught him about the immortality of the spirit through rebirth. Emmanuel went to the place at the end of the earth where the chariots of fire and spacecraft came from. There at the ends of the earth, Emmanuel saw a great and marvelous thing. He saw the celestial portals open up, which radiated an area as great as the lifeless sea, the Dead Sea. In the first portal, Emmanuel saw the people of Israel and their animals. The radiance of the light went all over in the first portal, and it revealed many intimate details. In the second portal, there arose mountains whose peaks reached into the sky and disappeared into the clouds. There were masses of snow, and below the snow, the brown-skinned people built their huts. The third portal was a gigantic land with rivers, lakes, and seas. Here, another population of people lived. The palace of Pleios was not far from these three celestial portals. Pleios was both a ruler of the people of Earth and the ruler of the people that traveled to the Earth from the stars. From this palace, Pleios ruled over the three peoples that had been fathered by him. Pleios had a very ancient spirit, and he was of giant size, just like the celestial suns. In the palace of Pleios, Emmanuel saw very tall men, the likes of whom he had never seen on earth. Their faces shone like the sun. Their eyes looked like burning torches, and their mouths issued fire. Their clothing looked like a covering of film. Their arms looked like golden wings. These people inhabited an environment of their own, because the air of the earth would have been fatal to them. These men were said to be from the constellation of the seven stars, Pleiaron. Question mark? I don't know. These men were great teachers, and there were two smaller men with them who said they were from Bali. The people from the heavens stayed on earth for a long time and procreated with the white lineage of people on the earth. The people that were begotten by the celestial suns were different in a unique way. They were not like other people on the earth. Their bodies were as white as snow and red as the rose blossom. Their hair was white as wool and their eyes were beautiful. The people on the earth inherited this beauty and propagated it further. However, during the course of millennia, they procreated with people of other star systems and created a new and special lineage. Emmanuel was told that he will make the impossible possible. And Emmanuel was told that the road ahead of him would be difficult because of the ignorance of the people of Earth. Emmanuel was told he was the son of Gabriel, another king of wisdom. He was told not to be bothered by the irrational teachings of the scribes and Pharisees. Emmanuel was also told that the people of Earth would not understand his teachings until they built their own spacecraft. And Emmanuel was brought back to Jerusalem by the spacecraft. Emmanuel started to teach, found Simon and Peter. Emmanuel saw two other men named James and John. And Emmanuel taught in the synagogues about the human spirit. Well, that little bit that I just read to you were some, what I thought, some very interesting notes from the Talmud of Emmanuel. The Talmud of Emmanuel is a writing, allegedly an ancient manuscript was found in 1963, and these scrolls were encased in preservative resin. They were discovered by Issa Rashid and Billy Meyer back in 1963, and what they had stumbled upon was the actual burial cave of Emmanuel, who the Meyer material says his name wasn't Jesus Christ. He's been erroneously called Jesus Christ over the years. And that what we have now is kind of a fictionalized version of the life of Emmanuel. And I know this is extremely controversial information, so bear with me, and I'll briefly go over some of the information related to the name Jesus versus the name Emmanuel. Well, if you go back to 325 AD, to the First Council of Nicaea, the Roman Emperor Constantine brought together all the leaders of religion in the Roman Empire, all of the Christian leaders, because he wanted to make the Roman Empire a Christian nation or a Christian empire. And these people got together and they had this tremendous meeting. And Constantine's intention was to bring together all of these different Christian factions. One of the first things they had to agree on is the name of the individual who today is called Jesus Christ by most churches. And it's said there that they were all kinds of heated debates. There were 53 different names that the people came up with. And evidently, the name Jesus Christ was not passed down. The name Emmanuel wasn't really passed down, and there was a lot of conflict over what the name really was. So Constantine stepped in, and he said they were going to call this individual's name Jesus Krishna. And one thing to keep in mind, that during this time there was no letter J in alphabets around the world. And not in the ancient world, there was no letter J. For example, in the 1611 version of the King James, it doesn't say the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. It says the Lord and Savior IESVS. Now, where did that name come from? Well, that's the Greek and the Latin spelling for Jesus today. Now, that was pronounced Jesus. The letter J really wasn't invented until about 1550, when a man named Gian Giorgio Turrisino, and actually an Italian scholar who knew German, invented the letter J. So the names James and John were not in the 1611 version of the King James Bible or in the Gutenberg Bible. The name James and John, the James and John's name actually was written with a Y, began with a Y. They're practically unpronounceable to English speakers. James's real name was Yaakov. John's real name was Yahuchanan. That's the best I can do to pronounce these. The book of Job was called the Book of Iob. And again, I'm describing this 1611 version of the Bible. So some say the transliteration of Yeshua into Jesus went something like this. Some argue that the original name of the person that the Meyer material calls Emmanuel was Yeshua in the Hebrew, and Yeshua was transliterated into the Greek as I-E-S-O-U-S, into the Latin as I-E-S-O-U-S. Now, these would have been pronounced Jesus. And eventually, That got translated into Jesus in the English. Now, the name Jesus, commonly used in Christianity today, did not exist until after 1600, which is a big shocker. Now, the Meyer material says the person that we call Jesus Christ today was actually named Emmanuel. And you can trace that name all the way back to the book of Isaiah, where it talks about Emmanuel. Now, Christianity today doesn't think Emmanuel is a name. They think Emmanuel was a title that identified the person that we call Jesus today. Remember, there was no letter J in the ancient world. There was no just sound in the ancient world. I would think this would be something that would be commonly taught today, but it's not for whatever reason. I'll give you some more evidence for this. If you look at the old paintings of the Renaissance, you'll often see the acronym or the inscription, I-N-R-I, below or above the depiction of the crucifixion. And this is a Latin inscription which would read in the Latin something like, Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. Iesus being the name that we today call Jesus. So today we pronounce that Jesus, the Nazarene King of the Jews. So I guess what I'm saying from all of this is that it's very, very possible that the name of this great teacher was Emmanuel, because it's certainly, and I know this sounds like horrible, but it could not have been Jesus, because there was no letter J in the ancient world. Actually, the name Jesus is kind of a hybrid. It has no etymological root meaning, because the letter J did not exist in any language until roughly about the time of Christopher Columbus. Roughly. The classical Latin did not have a distinct J sound, not the Hebrew, not the Greek. So, for example, Julius Caesar, his name began with a Y. So anyway, we've had some very, very strange things that have happened through history. I was completely unaware of this until I started to study this. The Old English alphabet had no letter W, no letter J, no letter U. If you go out on YouTube, you can look for a very interesting YouTube on the letter J. Another example, Julius Caesar was not spelled with a J or a sound of J. So anyway, this is kind of something I've covered before. So, I mean, I was very skeptical about the information related to the Talmud of Emmanuel until I studied all this. I want to say hello to Gemini Moon and Eve, and we have a guest in. Hope no one's offended by this material. It's very shocking. And I hope you didn't miss the beginning. At the beginning of the show, I read a little bit from my notes from the Talmud of Emmanuel. Let me put this in the chat room. This is a four-hour YouTube on the Talmud of Emmanuel, and it's very good to listen to. It's absolutely fascinating stuff. So in any case, I'm going to jump around a little bit tonight. I started out with the Talmud of Emmanuel. I'm going to jump back to the 20th century, because a lot of the Meyer material deals with prophecy. And I don't know if you all know this. If you've heard this show before, you're well aware of this. The Meyer material says that reincarnation is a reality, and that your spiritual consciousness comes back with a new personality, and you have a new material lifetime. And that the spirit form, the spiritual consciousness of Edward Albert Meyer, has been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And all these people that I just mentioned had the ability to look into the future, and it's because of the ancient nature of their spirit form. One of the prophecies of the Meyer material talks about in the 20th century, our time now, through artificial fertilizations, we will be able to clone a human being out of a cell. And human cloning, again, is the creation of a genetically identical copy of a human being. And sometimes the term artificial human cloning will come from this. And in Contact Report 202, it says that there is a human clone mutant that exists. Let me read this a little bit to you. It says, in the not-too-distant time, because genetic and cloning attempts have already been underway for many years, a lot is still kept secret. Thus, for at the time of this writing, for 6 years, already a cloned mutant had existed, which was kept behind doors in a secret laboratory. So the Meyer material talks about in the future, there will be cloned human beings that will be used in warfare. And these cloned human beings will become killer machines. And there will be divisions of these cloned human beings who will be devoid of any feelings. They will destroy and they will murder and annihilate. And it says in Contact Report 215, it says, the military clones will gain their independence and under their own management will bring death, devastation, destruction, and annihilation to the human beings of Earth and to the planet. And these apocalyptic events will be brought about by deadly weapons like chemical lasers, but also by these cloned murder machines. So the time that we're coming up on, we're in it now. It's called the third millennium. The Meyer material talks about the third millennium as a time of confusion and maliciousness, which will spread all over the earth. And during this time, right around the time that we live now, there will be a lot of very negative historical trends which will take place. In Contact Report 215, it talks about these cloned murder machines, but it also talks about the United States having two civil wars. And I believe this time is rapidly approaching because of the corruption of our government. We have felons today that are in positions of power in our governments. I want to tell you a little bit quickly, I won't cover all of these, about the goals of the New World Order. These are the people that are influencing most of our politicians. It says the first goal of the elite is to create a one world government. The world government will be a system in with people where people with knowledge about science and technology will control society. There will be a one world church, a unified monetary system. Billy calls this the Dark Order. It's described in the book, The Goblet of Truth. The second goal of the elite is to create a technocracy. This technocracy will be controlled by corporations. The technical elite will be a very small percentage of the population. This is something that Billy has also mentioned in The Goblet of Truth. He talks about that during the third millennium, our rights of self-determination will be taken away. And this is something the elite are doing right now. In Contact 251, Billy talks about the rise of the robot people. One of the goals of the elite is to merge mankind with machines. They intend to bring in something called the Age of Transhumanism. The fifth goal is to dumb down the public. Billy puts it this way. He says, the people will become indolent, obtuse, and indifferent. That's also mentioned in the Goblet of Truth. The sixth desire of the controllers is to move us into mega cities. They will take away our right to own vehicles. We will be put in driverless cars and will be only allowed to go into certain areas. In any case, I wanted to cover this briefly in relationship to the creation of these clones, to the creation of some of the prophecies, supposedly, the North American continent will be devastated because biological, chemical weapons, and nuclear weapons will be operated automatically by computerized systems that will run outside of human control. Now, these are prophecies which could happen. How are we going to be able to stop these things from happening? Well, the best that you and I can do is evolve our own consciousness and pass this information on to others. One of the most important things, I think, to learn is the law of reincarnation. So let me cover something here that is about how reincarnation works in the big picture. Because what comes back is the spiritual consciousness. You have a material consciousness, which is your psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. This includes your personality, your subconscious, your unconscious. We also have a spirit form, which comes into the body of the human being at 21 days. Centers its power in the midbrain. There's this area called the superior colliculus, and then it spreads its energies throughout the entire body. Now, the spirit form contains the essence of who you are in terms of all of your lifetimes up to this point. In the subconscious are the memories, in the subconscious of the material consciousness, are the memories of your previous personalities, which basically are not accessible during our current level of evolution. Later, quote unquote, during the age of recognitions, we will have access to these. Now, we spend about 40 to 60 million years incarnating into a physical body. We spend part of that time in the spiritual realm, part of that time in the physical realm. If you spent 100 years in the material body, you would ideally spend 152 years in the spirit realm. So your spirit could absorb the lessons of your previous life and then create a new personality, a new consciousness for your next life. Well, in a time of great overpopulation, there's not enough time. We won't get enough time in the spiritual realm. We'll have to reincarnate too soon. This causes problems with male children not being male enough, for all children not being independent enough from the parents. And these cycles stay screwed up for a long, long time until the population of the earth gets down to a smaller level. Okay, we spend 40 to 60 million years incarnating into a physical body. Now, there are 7 evolutionary steps for human beings. There are 5 stages where we have a physical human body. These stages are primitive life, rational life, intelligent life, real life, and the 5th stage, life and creational wisdom. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about these individual stages, but I want to get the bigger picture a little bit tonight. After the 5th stage, we go into the 6th stage where we're half physical and we're half spiritual. We spend about 56 million years in the half physical and half spiritual stage. So what I'm telling you is, and bear with me, as controversial as it is, the Meyer material explains that there is no heaven or hell the way our, you know, religions have taught us. There is a universal consciousness, but it's not a heavenly father. We'll get more to that. So after you get to this sixth stage, the final stage, you don't need a body anymore. You go into what are called the spiritual planes. This lasts for about 2.9 billion years that you're in this spiritual plane. The spiritual plane itself has seven other divisions. It starts out in the first division called Arahathrasada and goes to the Patali level. So that's the big picture. So there's no escape from this evolutionary process. It is the purpose of our life. We don't spend one lifetime and then go to a heaven or hell for all eternity. No. We have much, much work to do over a great period of time. Now, I want to say something also about the spirit form. It is not able to think creatively. You have a spirit form, you have a spiritual consciousness. It can't think creatively. You have a material consciousness that can think creatively. Your spirit form is invulnerable. It cannot be hurt by anything. Your material consciousness is vulnerable. You have to pay close attention to what this material consciousness thinks. Because if your thinking becomes too positive or too negative, you can lead yourself down the path of mental breakdowns and all kinds of psychological problems that can lead to problems in the circumstances of your life. So the idea is to keep your material consciousness as balanced, as neutral as possible. The spirit form is always completely neutral, positive, always balanced, always equalized. But it's not really conscious until it merges with creation. It's not completely conscious. The spirit form, although it has its own thoughts, its own feelings, is not completely conscious. Now, your human spirit form cannot enter into an animal or a plant. Once it enters into a spirit form, into the human, it always stays within the spirit of a human being. It never moves. The spirit form of a human being, once it starts into the reincarnation stage of the human being, it always stays there. Because the idea in reincarnation is to push your evolution forward. And that's one of the reasons probably there is no heaven or hell. Now, in the spiritual realm, there is something called the overall consciousness block. The spirit form, in order to evolve, it has to create this overall consciousness block. And that's where your previous life memories are processed, in this overall consciousness block. And eventually, the spirit form absorbs the essences of your previous life, the things like wisdom and love and logic and discernment, patience, all these virtues are absorbed. So your next incarnation, your material consciousness will have a step up ahead, so it can quickly accelerate to that level of evolution that you were at before. Now, the universal consciousness, in order to evolve, creates the spirit form. The spirit form needs the physical existence to evolve. The creation, this universal consciousness, therefore creates billions of spirit forms on different planets everywhere, all over the universe, all over our galaxy. There are in the Meyer material says there's something like 7 million human civilizations in our galaxy. So the entire universe is kind of lightly populated with planets that have the necessary conditions for human life. And the universal consciousness has created all of these planets and it has taken little fragments of itself, which are these human spirit forms, and put them on these other worlds so that people can evolve through millions and even billions of years once they get up in the spiritual planes and then eventually merge back with creation. And this is how the creation broadens itself. And this helps the whole universal consciousness to evolve. See, the universal consciousness created everything in the universe. And this universe will expand for 155 trillion years. And then it will go into a contraction phase for 155 trillion years, 155.5 trillion years, in fact. And then it goes into a rest phase before it evolves into the second stage. The universe has evolutionary steps. And this creation, this universal consciousness, is said to be the being and the non-being of life. It's said to be unmeasurable in its knowledge. Everything is in an evolution process, and that is the purpose to life. Our purpose is the evolving of our consciousness. And when we evolve our consciousness, we help the universal consciousness to evolve. We have to go through the reincarnation process as a part of our evolution. Now, as we continue to evolve, assuming that we don't destroy the planet, assuming that we don't have this tremendous Third World War, which could set us back for thousands of years, if not entirely annihilate us, if we continue somehow to evolve, and I know it looks bad, especially when you look at the elections and all the insanity in the world, we're just on the verge of World War III, too, and that's a whole nother show. But if somehow we make it through this, the Meyer material says we do, then there will be the uniting of humanity and the creation of a global language. And then only then will human beings learn to establish true good relationship with one another, because we'll all be able to communicate. And the earthly humanity will become united. And the Meyer material, of course, says that we should strive to make German the world language. In all of Billy's books, and I'm looking at three of these books, The Psyche, The Way to Live, and The Might of Thoughts, one page is written in German, which they hope to eventually become the world language. And the other page, in my case, is written in English because I'm an English-speaking person. And I want to read to you a page in the book, The Psyche, that talks about this term creation and compares it to the concept that we use, the concept of God. It says, because the creation is neither God nor anything similar, it says the word God is only an age-old term from a likewise age-old language of a foreign people, whose existence and language could still not be reliably proven into the year 1973/1994. I think they're talking about the Lyrians, which are said to be our forefathers. Nevertheless, with absolute certainty, it firmly stands, even if the theology and other sciences deny it, that the word God from this age-old and foreign language, from Lyra Vega, has nothing in the slightest to do with the term creation. Billy says they're completely different. The word God, he says, from time immemorial, has been used as a designation for human beings. Human beings, because of their spiritual and consciousness-based powers and their abilities resulting from them. These people were able to master and accomplish things which remain denied to us today. And because of their abilities, these human beings were named gods and goddesses. Remember, I was reading from my notes from the book of Emmanuel about Pleios. Pleios was the king of wisdom of the earth during that time. He had came from other star systems, his people. In any sense, the term gods or goddesses means nothing other than standing above the emperors and kings, spiritually in a consciousness-based manner, standing higher in esteem and honor than the princes of the land, the sovereigns themselves. Those named gods were asked for advice by the people of the earth. Okay. Anyway, that's probably enough of that. It goes on to explain in the book, The Psyche, how we got the term devil, and that there was a god of the hunt. And this was another one of these extraterrestrials that actually had two horn-like growths out of his skull. His name was Tubal, and eventually his name was changed to the devil. And that was seized upon by the religions. So, according to the Meyer material, there is no devil either. What there is a oneness to creation. There is a universal consciousness. I talked in the beginning of the show about the Talmud of Emmanuel. And Emmanuel taught that the body and the spirit are one, and that the body actually comes from the spirit. Remember, the spirit form resides in your superior colliculus in midbrain. It comes in 21 days after the fertilization occurs, and that's when the heart of the fetus starts to beat. But there is no duality or trinity. We really have to think of our own physical body as an extension of the spirit form. It's really hard for us in our limited thinking to grasp the truth. If you ever get time to go out in the forest and you see these long, they're like big weeds that grow up around here. I mean, they sometimes can be 6 and 7 feet tall. Think about those spirit forms coming out of the spirit realm and into these weeds as they're growing. Because every plant, every animal, every human being has a spirit form. Now, the spirit form contains the power that's within you. The power within is a phrase that's used in the Meyer writings. And the term sometimes is called the creational natural power within you. And Billy says to embrace the power within yourself and use it for yourself. This power is part of our spirit form. The spirit form actually has the ability to transfer something called the swinging wave over to the conscious mind. And in later forms of evolution, we'll be able to use these electromagnetic waves that have sometimes tremendous power associated with them. And we can do incredible things when we finally get at that point of evolution, telepathy, telekinesis. These are called fine fluidal powers. These are vibrational energies tiny fine material, fluidal units of information. These collectively constitute a oneness that can go through you like an electrical current through wires. They flow through the brain and through the body, and they reach out into the environment, into the ether. These fine fluidal energies, they settle in your clothes, in your furniture, even in your trees outside your house. And we learn eventually to harness these fine fluidal energies. Now, we think of this as something that is supernatural, but it's not. And that's one of the problems that we have, is because of our lack of understanding, we go into fear and religion. And let me go step back in time to 1945. We were talking about the fine fluidal powers. Well, there was a group of extraterrestrials that were on the Earth back in those times. They were called the Giza Intelligences. At that time, they still had a headquarters on the Earth far below the Giza Plateau. The Thule Society in Germany knew about these extraterrestrials. They had connections with these extraterrestrials. One particular man named Hermann Steinschneider was used by these extraterrestrials to influence Hitler. Now, Hitler was actually a genius in many respects. And the Pleiaren say that he would have been a tremendously positive world leader. That was his goal. That was his destiny. But these negative extraterrestrials use this guy named Hermann Steinschneider, who was called Erich John Hannesen during that time, to send Hitler down the wrong path. And for thousands of years, these extraterrestrials had been below the Giza Plateau, and they had influenced us. And see, they knew about the fine fluidal powers. They had the ability to harness and use those. And they used them to deceive humans, Earth humans, with miracles and visions, and to kind of keep us under a religious delusion. One of the powers of these extraterrestrials was called telenotic impulses. And even though the extraterrestrials are gone, they've been kicked off the Earth, we're still affected today by these telenotic impulses. It says here that Adolf Hitler had been instructed by the forces of the Pleiaren through telepathic impulses in his earliest youth. They were trying to keep this guy on the right path. But he fell more and more under influence by this guy named Hermann Steinschneider, who was a pawn of the Giza Intelligences. And you know what happened next. World War II, the Great War broke out. We are on the verge of a third world war. There are groups within our government which are trying to stir up a third world war. And it's much closer than we realize. So one of the things that I hope in some small way is that those of us that are paying attention to spiritual teaching can be kind of a stabilizing factor on the earth. So we can learn to always remain relaxed and gain might over ourselves and to use these spiritual teachings to remain neutral positive, even in the most challenging times, because we're in a day and age where everything that we see almost everything coming from the mainstream media is disinformation today. And I want to give you one example of disinformation that came in the past. The Meyer material says Apollo 11 was a hoax. Apollo 11 didn't make it to the moon, which is a tremendous thing to think that we've been publicly lied to in this way. And you might ask yourself, well, how can that be possible? Well, if you study Apollo 11, it's very interesting that Neil Armstrong crashed both lunar landers. They had two models set up on the Earth that were basically powered with jet engines. And Neil was trying to learn how to operate these guys so he could land the LEM on the moon. Well, the first one he had to bail out of, and it crashed, and the second one had the same fate. Well, they also had a lunar simulator. And I heard from another researcher, and I'm not remembering his name at the moment, but he stated that NASA never even in simulation was able to land the LEM in simulation either. So Quetzal says here in Contact 201 about the moon hoax, as we have already explained several times, the Americans' Apollo 11 moon landing on July 20th, 1969 did not take place because everything was a great design swindle through which the entire world was fooled. And the Meyer material says there were only 37 people who knew about the hoax. And many of these people have been killed to keep things secret. Now, one of the reasons I bring this up is because there's tremendous false information coming out in the media today. It has been like this before, but it seems most flagrant. Let me continue here with the moon hoax. Further to say is that the moon landing swindle is also connected with murder. And we're seeing that today in our politics as well. Believe me, there's a lot of murder going on. And indeed, in the respect that in spite of the duty of silence of those involved, a great number cannot be silent, respectively, could not be silent, which led and will further lead to arranged accidents and illnesses. And they can arrange accidents, they can do things to your car, they can intentionally run large trucks into you on the road, and people also will have illnesses. The Central Intelligence Agency has the ability to give people heart attacks. So I think our government has been taken over by a foreign power. Some foreign power is in control of the CIA at this point. But that's kind of another topic. But anyway, I just wanted to bring up the moon landing as just an example of the hoaxes that have been going on the Earth. Another thing to keep in mind is that there have been 22 attempts on Billy's life. And not only do we have government agents, secret neo-Nazi groups trying to kill Billy, there's also a group of extraterrestrials from the Sirius system that are sometimes called the Men in Black. And the Meyer material, yes, says they're real. And they've been trying to kill Billy as well. So we live in some very difficult times. Probably the biggest problem, and I know I'm bouncing all over tonight, but the biggest problem that we have is overpopulation. And on the 21st, I have a guy, 21st of October on Friday, a guy named Dave Gardner that's going to talk about overpopulation. It's something I've neglected a little bit. There are something like 9,000 births per hour. 75 to 77 million people born per year. I think we've reached the age of exponential population growth, which is a very, very dangerous time. What is happening is the desertification of the earth. And desertification is a type of land degradation in which a relatively dry land region becomes increasingly arid and loses its bodies of water over time, loses its vegetation and wildlife. And that's what's happening to the western United States right now. It's being turned into a desert. And we're seeing these tremendous fires that have burned up most of the forest in the west. So desertification is an ecological and environmental problem. It causes the removal of vast amounts of vegetation, and it can lead to drought. It can lead to climactic shifts. It can be caused by overgrazing and deforestation. At one time, our world was like a giant forest everywhere. And that is the healthiest state a planet can be in. See, the forests moderate the weather. And because we're losing forests at such a rate, this leads to more extreme weather. Right now, there's a hurricane that's the size of the state of Florida that's moving up the East Coast. So some of you that listen to this archive may be being affected by this. The rainforest is being destroyed. Let me read something about the rainforest here. In other locations, the living space for many humans is endangered and destroyed because the rainforests are being felled, and from that, devastating climate changes and uninhabitable areas are resulting through the desertification, the advancing of the deserts. And that's what we're seeing, the advancing of the deserts, because we've destroyed the forests, because we created the cities, we knocked the forests down, created the cities, created fields for farmland, sporting facilities, factories, and now we're having desertification. So we're seeing the Greenland ice thinning and the Greenland ice sheets are melting. So these are some of the devastating things that are going on right now, and we're having some very, very challenging times. I want to thank everyone for listening and give close thought to these messages and try to apply them to your daily lives. I'll be back on Wednesday night with a guest, Raphael O'Neill, who's going to talk about mind control and chemtrails and some other topics. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you soon.